Thank you. Good afternoon. I appreciate your attendance at this session on science, faith, paradigms. I also want to express my appreciation to our host institution, Point Loma Nazarene University, and the American Scientific Affiliation for giving me the opportunity to have this talk with you. I also want to thank my colleague, Dr. Mike Tennyson, professor of biology at Evangel University, who's collaborated with me on this presentation. What we want to do in the next 20 minutes is to introduce to you the need for and the development of a tool that can be used to identify patterns of relating faith and science that are in practice among college and university science professors. And then I want to share briefly with you what I think are some interesting findings from the survey which we administered to a sample of university science professors. Much of my work, broadly speaking, is in response to the kind of challenge that was issued by Reverend Dr. Alistair McGrath to the Council of Christian Colleges and Universities community back in 2002 when he wrote, "It is increasingly clear that relating Christian faith to the natural sciences is one of the most pressing academic tasks of our day." Science faith paradigms essentially can be defined as mental frameworks or mental constructs for relating scientific understanding and Christian theology. As you might expect, there have been numerous alternative paradigms proposed over the last half century, and I'd like to share with you just some examples of that. The father of this movement, perhaps, is Ian G. Barber, a physicist and churchman who has been the most prolific writer on this subject, with his books published in the years represented here over a 40-year span of time. As his thinking and writing evolved on this subject, he proposed a variety of classification schemes ranging from 3 to 5 integrative paradigms. His latest iteration consisted of these four: conflict, independence, dialogue, and interaction. Some argue that he really had 5 because embedded in his conflict paradigm are 2 paradigms, 2 patterns, one in which scientific materialism is dominant, the other in which biblical literalism is dominant. Arthur Peacock is another who has had his feet planted firmly in both realms of theology and science at Cambridge. He suggested in a book published in 1981, 8 integrative paradigms, somewhat complicated, lacking the simplicity and the symmetry of later schemes, such as that produced by Nancy Murphy, a doctorate in theology, doctorate in philosophy of science, who explicated a 5-fold typology for the relation of theology and science. Interestingly, she was following the suggestion made by Ian Barber in his first published book that those who are seeking patterns for relating faith and science would do well to adapt Niebuhr's classification scheme for relating Christ and culture. So I don't have time to delve into that, but I think you would find that to be a very interesting and fruitful approach. Richard Wright, many of you would know, former or professor emeritus of biology at Gordon College, wrote Biology Through the Eyes of Faith, a book published in a series by the CCCU. He presented 4 integrative paradigms: concordism, substitutionism, compartmentalism, and complementarism. I'm not going to take time at this point to describe or define those, but just to show you here some of the variety as well as overlapping ideas in these proposed theoretical schemes. Richard Bube, material scientist at Stanford, now retired, formerly an officer of the ASA and for many years editor of the journal published by the ASA, Perspectives. In his capstone work, he identified 7 patterns for relating science and the Christian faith. Interesting feature of his work is that 2 of those 7 paradigms suggested that science and theology should interact. The findings of one should affect the other. He does not use the term concordism, but those two are highly suggestive of a concordist approach. Dick Carlson, we're honored to have him here today. My neighbor now in Missouri. 1 year before he retired from a professor of physics at University of the Redlands, edited and published Science and Christianity, Four Views. In the foreword, or the introduction, he rejected consideration of non-integrative paradigms like scientific imperialism and presented four paradigms that he and his collaborators deemed to be viable: creationism, independence, qualified agreement, partnership. I want to thank you, Dr. Carlson, for providing this material for my research and appreciation. Having observed through this extensive review of the literature some general overlap, but yet some unique differences among these various theoretical paradigms, I saw the need to develop a new scheme in furthering my research goals. I used the criteria of parsimony, symmetry, trying to achieve some balance of opposing paradigms, and salience, trying with humility to identify those most important and broadly recognized theoretical paradigms. That produced for me a fivefold scheme that I proposed, with the conflict models on the extremes, flanked by compartmentalism and complementarism, and with concordism at the center. I'll not take time right now to describe those, but I will in future slides here. The development of a valid and reliable science faith paradigm scale was necessitated by the fact that no previous survey instrument existed. While various theoretical paradigms had been proposed, I saw nowhere in the literature that anyone had ever published data about what percentage of science professors or theologians or anyone might identify with a particular science faith paradigm. So I needed to develop the instrument in order to do my research, and in so doing, I followed the methodology of Gable and Wolf, instrument development in the affective domain. This required establishing sound psychometric properties, among which are the following. Content validity had to be determined before the survey instrument was ever administered. This was done by content experts conducting two rounds of survey rating exercises. Only 79 items among the 130 or so that I developed had 90% agreement among these judges. And so those were the ones used in my initial research. The survey containing those 79 items and other correlating scales were submitted to a stratified random sample of 1,500 college and university science professors in the United States, who returned 312 usable survey responses. Just so you'll get an idea of the makeup of these folks, we surveyed only scientists in the hard, pure life sciences and the hard, pure non-life sciences, using the classification scheme developed and widely accepted in Andrew Bigland's 1973 work. So you'll see that while we didn't have many entomologists participating for some reason, we had a pretty good variance in the remaining sample from among microbiologists, botanists, physiologists, and zoologists. Those in the non-life scientists, astronomers, I guess, were too busy for this. They might have been out on the space shuttle or something. But chemists represented 40% of the sample in this category, along with geologists, mathematicians, and physicists. Construct validity. Does the instrument measure what's purported to be measured? Is based on factor analysis, or more precisely, principal components analysis and correlational analysis. Correlation with other valid and reliable scales that I had included on my instrument for the purpose of measuring construct validity. The Francis scale of attitude toward Christianity was one. Another was the Scientific Attitude Inventory 2. These analyses revealed five empirical factors corresponding to the five theoretical paradigms that I had proposed. Here they are listed in order by their factor loadings, highest to lowest. So you'll see that the two conflict paradigms had the highest factor loadings. This does not mean that they were the most widely employed among the scientists, but rather that when responding to the survey items, these science professors gave more consistent answers on those. Those were followed by compartmentalism, complementarism, and finally concordism. Reliability is the measure of internal consistency of these five factors or five subscales, or we might say the five paradigms for relating faith and science. The standard in this research is that adequate reliability is represented by a coefficient of reliability greater than 0.70. You can imagine my delight as a researcher when I found that the reliabilities for the five factors range from 0.87 to a high of 0.95, so we had good reliability established. Following all of this analysis, we had a 50-item scale. So 50 of the 79 original items judged to have good content validity by the experts also had good construct validity. This instrument, the Science Faith Paradigm Scale, has demonstrated ability to identify the science faith paradigms employed by individual science professors. Let me just give you a couple of quick... Well, before I give you a few examples, let me give a little more description to these five paradigms. The first, conflict theology over science, is represented by this two-dimensional Venn diagram where theology and science address two different domains, but they overlap. And where the overlap produces conflict with each other in describing reality, theology should naturally be judged correct. So shorthand for this, and we theologians like this, theologians know best. Examples of those who would identify with this paradigm would include Ken Ham, Answers in Genesis, and surprisingly, Kurt Wise, a paleontology PhD student of Stephen Jay Gould, a famous compartmentalist. The conflict science over theology is just the opposite of the one that I just introduced to you, where science and theology fundamentally conflict with each other in describing reality. Science should naturally be accepted as correct. So here, the concise statement would be scientists know best. An example of a scientist identifying with this paradigm would be Peter Enns. It's indicated by his statements in a book published this year, The Evolution of Adam. Compartmentalism, or non-overlapping magisteria, is represented by science and theology being in two separate realms, two different domains of reality. And while they may be closely abutting one another, they do not overlap. Therefore, by definition, theology and science cannot conflict with each other, neither can they agree with one another. So, concisely, we could describe this paradigm as they share no common ground, and the most famous representative of that would be Stephen Jay Gould. Concordism is a paradigm in which you believe that theology and science are addressing matters in the same domain of reality, different aspects of the same reality. And where they, and so they should have perfect agreement, one-to-one correspondence with each other, without any disagreement. They should agree. An example of a scientist that would likely fall into this paradigm would be Hugh Ross of Reasons to Believe. Finally, the fifth one, complementarism, is really difficult, in my view, to represent by a two-dimensional Venn diagram. Mike and I have talked about using jagged edges and so forth, but the basic idea here is that both theology and science address the same realm of reality. They describe different aspects of that same reality, but both are needed together in order to have a more complete understanding of reality. Apart from the other, the understanding is incomplete. Some examples of those who likely would identify with complementarism would be Francis Collins of the National Institutes of Health, and Dennis Lamoureux recently wrote, "I love Jesus and I accept evolution." That's a complementarist view, and I checked with him just to make sure he would not object to being categorized that way. Now, quickly, for some of the findings of the administration of this survey to the science professors that I mentioned earlier, we wanted to see which of these scientists identified with which of the five science faith paradigms. The criteria we used to say that one identified with a particular paradigm was 80% agreement with the items on that particular science faith paradigm subscale. And so in examining the data in this way, we determined that almost half of the science professors surveyed did not answer questions consistently enough to identify with one science faith paradigm. However, almost 43% did identify with one paradigm, and a very intelligent 11% were identifying with two paradigms simultaneously. So of those 133 science professors who identified, who employed only one paradigm, 70% of them used the complementarist paradigm. Might be a little surprising. It was to me. The conflict, science over theology, was a distant second, with the other three following behind. Science, the 11% or 34 who were using two paradigms simultaneously fell into these paradigms. A strong plurality of them were conflating complementarism and concordism. And we stopped to think about that. We can understand the difficulty any of us have in trying to clearly demarcate or distinguish between those two paradigms. The second one behind that's conflict, science over theology being conflated with compartmentalism. And still, I think if we think about that a moment, we can understand why some who would choose the conflict, science over theology paradigm would be also sympathetic to the compartmentalism paradigm. What variables account for differences in the paradigms used? In other words, are there variables that contribute to a statistically significant difference among these science professors in the paradigms that they employ? Here are the variables we have related to the demographic data that we collected from these subjects. Carnegie classification. We had a good variety in the sample from Division I research universities all the way down to community colleges. What type of institutional control? Some of our scientists were employed by public, others by private Catholic, others by private evangelical or Protestant or private non-religious institutions. We looked at their science disciplines. We had demographic data about their faculty rank from instructor to professor, male or female. Their personal religious affiliation, did they identify their affiliation as evangelical, mainline Protestant, Catholic, none or other? And we asked them to self-identify their personal religious commitment on a scale from from minimum to maximum. Did we find any statistically significant difference with respect to any of these variables? Yes and no. There was no statistically significant difference in scores on these science faith paradigm scales based on the Carnegie classification of the institution, the type of control, public, private, religious, non-religious, and not by science discipline. We often think, well, biologists and chemists, for example, would have very different perspectives on how to relate science and theology. But we did not find any evidence to support that. Faculty rank. Only with respect to instructors were there any statistically significant differences in the paradigms they employed. And we can speculate during the Q&A time about why that might be. With respect to gender, only one paradigm was statistically significantly different. Can you guess which one that would be? Between males and females? That's a good try, but not it. Well, I'll give you a book anyway for time. Okay, think about it. Male and female science professors, statistically significantly different in one scale.
Women just didn't want everybody to get along.
No.
Really?
No, but I can understand where you're going with that. I got one left. I need somebody to get it right. Okay. Compartmentalism. Women's brains are wired differently, we understand from the sociologist and the behavioral scientist. Women faculty, science faculty, compared to their male counterparts, identified or employed to a significantly less degree the compartmentalist paradigm. The strongest factor that contributed to statistically significant differences were personal religious affiliation and personal religious commitment. Just a quick illustration of that. We have the average scores, or the average standard scores, on the vertical column, and you'll see that only those science professors who identified with no religious affiliation scored positively on the conflict science over theology scale. Only ones. Similarly, on the complementarism scale, those who scored positively who had average positive scores were those who affiliated with Protestant, Catholic, or mainline Protestant, or even other. But those who were not religiously affiliated at all had a mean negative score on that scale. So the dominant paradigm employed is complementarism. This counters popular thinking promoted by the media that loves the conflict paradigm, don't they? But it's consistent with the findings published recently by Elaine Howard Eklund, who conducted 275 in-depth interviews with natural and social scientists. She found that 15% do see religion and science in conflict. Another 15% say they're never in conflict. 70% fall into what I would describe as complementarist or concordist positions. None, she says, compartmentalize. So, in conclusion, we have some integrative challenges for science professors, 47% of whom, when surveyed, employed no integrative paradigm. An additional 11% conflated two paradigms. So there's some growth opportunities to improve self-awareness, to evaluate reasons why one has chosen a particular paradigm, the need to agree on common nomenclature. There are a lot of different suggested patterns. This one has been demonstrated to have empirical evidence. Science professors have the opportunity to develop teaching approaches to help students become more self-aware of their patterns for relating faith and science. So how could the science-faith paradigm scale assist scientists, theologians, and the public? A few suggestions. First, it enables them to identify or label the specific science-faith paradigm that they employ, facilitate an understanding of the diversity of scientific theological perspectives, and to provide tools for engaging the culture in the matters of relating science and faith. In fact, this is what Eklund has strongly encouraged, is that scientists of faith step to the microphone and in front of the camera and take advantage of the media to engage the culture. A short form of this scale is in development, taking the top five loading items from each of the five factors. Further administrations are needed to verify the psychometric properties of the short form, and so we're seeking collaborators. Both the long and the short form are available for no charge. We would request that you would share your data with us, and you can contact us here if you would like to collaborate with us in this endeavor. Let me close by just noting that last summer at Evangel University, we hosted an inaugural Faith and Science Conference aimed at helping our church leaders become more adept at addressing the issue of science and faith with congregations that are increasingly scientifically sophisticated and technologically oriented. We're repeating that in 2014. We'd love for you to be a part of it, to present, to consider sharing a paper. And these are the dates. And we trust that you'll pray with us as we continue planning for that conference. That's a good question. Could be expanded to that. That's an excellent question. I'll try to take the hands in the orders I saw them.
Have you had anything in mind for longitudinal studies, say, tracking these same people over a certain time, see if variables grow and see if that changes?
I haven't done that, but right. that would provide helpful insights, I'm sure.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
When you say that 46% did not use any integrity variables, do you mean any of these ones or any at all?
Of the 312 respondents, 46% of them were not answering the questions consistently enough
to fit into
one paradigm.
Of the ones that you have.
But right.
What if you have the wrong paradigm then?
The wrong?
46% are not working on an empty vacuum.
Well, maybe there would be another set of categories where those would have fallen into categories.
That you didn't use, or...
Could be.
Or these ones are not descriptive correctly or something.
Could be, yes.
And your mindful esteem, where did the intelligent design fall?
Well, the matter of origins would be, I think, maybe a whole different construct, and they could fall...
We
have no data to respond.
Different
axis. Yeah.
Okay, maybe one more question, and we'll move on to our next speaker.
So what value do you think it has to have a paradigm? What value to the individual or to the community does having a paradigm, have?
I think for consistency, for integrity, to know that you are communicating and thinking and teaching with consistency.
I can see that it could be limiting if you didn't understand all the paradigms, or you're locking it into a specific set of paradigms, mm-hmm. and therefore you don't allow things that are integrative ideas between them or things like that. And so you're actually kind of limiting the creative possibilities of the community to interact.
I would see it broadening their ability to interact when they recognize that there are consistent patterns and there's diversity of patterns. They can encourage their students, when they understand that, they can encourage their students to have greater self-understanding about their own paradigm and recognize that there are others who operate out of different paradigms. And I think that enhances the conversation.
So helping to develop compassion for people who think other ways by understanding their ways.
Right. Well said. Okay.
All right.
Thank
well,
you. Thank you very much.